The authors need to understand that the publisher can't do everything, right?
Yep.
So you have to be a major, major player in not only the writing of the book, but the publication of the book.
Hey, my name is Jenna Kutcher, and I am obsessed with all things business, marketing, numbers, and helping you to navigate both the messy and the magical seasons of this thing called life. I'm a small town mama who took a $300 camera, grew a successful photo biz, and now I work from home and run a seven-figure online business. I teach you the tried and true secrets to building a career you adore. Shy away from the real talk? No way. Money, hardship, growth, loss, and marketing are all topics we discuss here. Think of this as your one-stop shop for happy hour with a gal pal mixed with business school. Pull up a seat, make sure you're cozy, and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Gold Digger Podcast. Every time you dive into a new endeavor, project, or idea, you're guaranteed to learn a lot along the way. When I finally surrendered to this idea of writing my first book, well, the learning started immediately. Drafts and edits and manuscripts and agents and publishers and editors, all of these new tasks for me, and all of them led me to work with an entirely new team of people who are helping me learn the industry and make my first book a book that you cannot wait to read. One of those new people in my corner is my editor, Carrie Thornton. Carrie has been in the world of publishing for 25 years. She's helped books come to life and work with authors you might recognize, names like Gabrielle Union to Jessica Simpson, Amy Poehler, and more. And now she's working with me, and truthfully, I am the luckiest. Carrie works for Day Street Books. It's an imprint of HarperCollins. We'll explain what all of that means inside of this episode. But you know that I love peeling back the curtain on what it is I'm working on, and my book journey is absolutely no different. Carrie and I are chatting through the role of an editor, why her editing process is different, why she wanted to edit my book in the first place, and what you need to consider if you want to pitch a book yourself. Here she is, my editor and friend, Carrie Thornton. Something I love about being a podcaster is getting the chance to support my network of fellow creators and business owners. Being Boss, hosted by Emily Thompson, is an exploration of not only what it means, but what it takes to be boss as a creative business owner, a freelancer, or side hustler. Being Boss is another amazing resource for anyone interested in getting inspired and, more importantly, getting started. If you like Gold Digger, trust me, you are going to love Being Boss. Emily even covers topics that are near and dear to our Gold Digger hearts, like taking time off as an entrepreneur and finding vision for your business and life. Listen to Being Boss wherever you get your podcasts. Carrie, I am so excited to have you on the Gold Digger Podcast today, and I'm so excited for our conversation. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm excited to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
So I have gotten the pleasure to know you over almost the last year, and our relationship has just continued to grow, and I believe it will continue to do so. But I am selfishly so excited for this interview because most of the time you're asking me questions, but now I get to ask you questions. So first things first, tell me a little bit about your career and your journey. You're an editor and you kind of honed the craft of helping other people tell their stories, but I want to know more about you. So tell me a little bit about your journey at becoming who you are today.
Well, first of all, the pleasure has been mine, Jenna. It's the best part about my job is the friendships and the relationships I form with my authors. And this one is super special to me. So I just want to say that out of the gate. And I'm super grateful to you, but we'll get to that later. I've been doing this for 25 years. And I moved to New York 2 weeks after I graduated from college. I went to school in Virginia. I grew up in Virginia. And I'm lucky in that many alumni from my college work in publishing, worked in publishing then, work in publishing now. And I didn't go to college thinking I would end up in publishing. I went to college thinking I would become an English teacher. And I definitely knew that I was going to study English. And, you know, I had that typical liberal arts education and thought, you know, I was going to, you know, do that thing. And I realized pretty quickly that my temperament was maybe not well suited for teaching, even though I think at the time it was more shyness and being afraid to be in front of a classroom, to be honest. And I studied a lot of things in college that were really interesting to me, anthropology and art history. And I thought, well, maybe I'll go into anthropology or museum studies, or, you know, I'll get a graduate degree. And the real mainstay of my life was that I worked in bookstores. And okay. I was a reader, and I was a big reader, and I was a reader my whole life. And, you know, from the time I was a very little girl, and I worked in a bookstore at home in the summer, and I worked in a bookstore while I was in college. And at William and Mary, where I went to school, there is, like I said, this alumni network, and they have this seminar every couple of years where the publishing folk come and talk to graduating seniors and juniors about publishing. And I thought, oh, I'm going to check this out. And to be honest, I never had thought about publishing as a career very much, but there was something really exciting about thinking that the books that I sold and the books that I read, I could help to make. And, you know, I also really loved music. So there was this sort of thought in the back of my mind, like, well, maybe I'll be a music journalist. So moving to New York was a big catalyst.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So I graduated and I, you know, I had some internships. I had an internship during spring break my senior year. And I just got the bug, and I got my first job, you know, pretty quickly after moving up here, making very little money. And I ended up still working in a bookstore. The chain that I worked for in Virginia transferred me here to a store here. And, you know, I stuck it out. A lot of the people I started with, they ended up going away to grad school, going to law school, not staying in publishing, but I did. And now it's been 25 years. And I think my parents never thought I would stay in New York. But I feel really lucky because I got a great mentor really early on. And working in the bookstores really was a huge part of the education, I think, of why I had a feel for it. But I feel pretty fortunate.
I love that. Margaret's story, my book agent, she was started in the mailroom and like worked her way up, and you starting in bookstores. I mean, it's pretty amazing. What was it like? So once you enter the world of publishing, what was your first role? I can't imagine that you became an editor right away. I'm assuming that that's a role that you led up to with time and expertise. What did it look like kind of?
Oh, for sure. My first job in New York, I was an intern for a literary agent who was an independent agent. And her name was Sarah Jane Fryman. And I'm incredibly grateful to her because it was a job that I had when I arrived, right?
Okay.
And most internships weren't paid, and she was paying me. And, you know, she lived on the Upper West Side. She lived in a beautiful apartment. She ran her business out of her apartment. And, you know, this was a world that was completely new to me in every single way. I grew up, you know, my family was not wealthy. There were four kids, stay-at-home mom. My dad worked construction. Like, we really struggled in a lot of ways. So she had a very different lifestyle. Let's just put it that way. So it was total culture shock, but she was incredibly kind and gracious. And she was always so complimentary because she could see that I was a good reader for her and I had a sense of things, and she was really supportive. So I did that for a while, but I needed insurance. Mm-hmm. So yes. I then got a job working at St. Martin's Press, which is, you know, part of the Macmillan Group now. And I was the sub rights assistant, and sub rights are all the rights that are, you know, audio rights, paperback rights, foreign rights, selling first serial to magazines. And I was the assistant, and, you know, it was, you know, as far away from editorial as it gets, but, you know, I needed a job, and it actually was super useful and fun, mostly because I was a sponge and I became friends with the publicity department kids and the editorial kids. And also I sat outside of the president's office because that's just where my desk was. Nice. So I could see all the people coming to talk to her about big acquisitions and all the activity that went on around her. And she was such a personality. She's still in the business. She's like a legend. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a slightly different time in publishing. I had a typewriter on my desk. But I still had to work part-time. I worked at Barnes & Noble part-time and would leave my desk and go walk over there to the Chelsea Barnes & Noble, which is no more, because the pay was so low. Entry-level salaries in publishing then were really much lower than they are now. But, you know, it was like total book immersion all the time. And I think I did that for 2 years, and I started applying after a year for editorial assistant jobs. And it took me a while to get one because I think, you know, those are really just hard jobs to get. And I had a different kind of experience, but I got really fortunate in that someone that I worked with at St. Martin's knew someone who worked for Alice Mayhew at Simon & Schuster, who was like a legendary editor. She passed away a couple of years ago, but she was, you know, she edited All the President's Men. She edited David McCulloch. I mean, she's just this legend of publishing. And I was so naive and young. I didn't really know who she was when I went to the interview.
Probably good. You would have been nervous.
I was exactly. So I therefore wasn't. And she called me the next day and said, I like your style, but you don't have any experience. So I'm going to tell the paperback people to hire you. So I ended up getting a job in the paperback division of Simon & Schuster because she told them to hire me. Aww. And it was so kind of her to do that. She didn't have to. She certainly could have just ignored me. And, you know, once I realized who she was, I thought, oh my gosh, what a fool I was. I acted like an idiot in that interview. But she would say, I hear you're doing a great job. legendarily growly voice. And then I worked for this woman who I worked for many years. We moved over to Random House a few years later together and started an imprint there. And she became a great mentor to me and she taught me so much. And so that was an amazing stroke of luck. So I ended up working for that woman. Her name is Becky Cabaza for about 8 years at Simon & Schuster and Random House. And she taught me how to be an editor and, you know, how to balance the work. And, you know, she was the editorial director when we went to Random House and I moved into her role when she left. And, you know, that was just a really amazing trajectory for me.
Mm. I love all of those stories and nods to the people who just took a chance. It's like those little yeses to them were massive yeses in your journey. And one thing that I would love for you to explain to people, because it was totally new to me, is like, what is an imprint? There's so many different publishing houses, there's imprints. Can you walk us through kind of the structure of that world?
Sure. So within, you know, a larger publishing house and the way that we talk about it in the business, there are the big five in New York. So it's Penguin Random House, Simon & Schuster, which now Penguin Random House has acquired. So maybe there'll be big four, Hachette, HarperCollins, Macmillan. And within each of those companies are imprints. And they are, when you look at the side of the book, you see the colophons and those little symbols, right? And yep, those are the imprints. So there's within Harper, there's William Morrow, there's Harper Proper, there's Harper One. Those are the flagship divisions, imprints. And within those divisions are imprints within. So they are basically the, I guess brands is another way to put it, right?
Yep.
So, and those imprints are defined by the books that they publish. And each imprint has sort of a guiding principle of this is what we're known for. This is what our specialty is. This is our organizing principle in terms of the way that we market and publicize our books. So my imprint is called Day Street Books, and I'm an imprint within the Morrow group. So Morrow has Morrow, William Morrow. It has Avon, which does all the romance fiction. It has Harper Voyager, which does fantasy and sci-fi. It has Lifestyle Imprint that does cookbooks, amazing cookbooks. I mean, it's sort of really varied. Day Street is an imprint, is all nonfiction, only 35 books a year. We're one of the really small imprints. And, you know, it's a branding tool. And yeah, consumers don't really know much about imprints. There are very few imprints that consumers even recognize. Knopf, yeah, and Penguin probably being the only two. It's really a tool for booksellers, really, and agents, literary agents and authors, because we need to sell ourselves to you to help you choose when you want to sell your book, which one you'd like to go with. So, but we use it as a branding tool for ourselves just so that we can, you know, sort of differentiate ourselves within the business. So Day Street is 35 books a year, all nonfiction, really heavy hitters in their world. So I always say celebrities and celebrities in their field. So I want to work with authors that, you know, you're the only person who could write the book you're writing. It's really special. It's career defining for you. And we know that we can build a campaign that is incredibly bespoke to your book and to talk to your fans, but also to many, many other people, because our role is to amplify the messaging and to turn someone who's famous for one thing into a famous author. So that's how I define what our imprint does. And every imprint has their sort of mission statement. So that's what an imprint is.
I love that. You know, it's so interesting when I went through the process. So Margaret is my agent, and then she booked out, sent out our proposal, and then we did our calls. And Carrie, I was just listening. So after every call I did, because I did like 7 or 8 different calls, I recorded a voice note to myself to like remember how I felt and what the energy was. And I recently listened to my voice note about when we did our call together. And I was like, I just love the vibes. Like, I feel comfortable. I feel like she gets it. Like, and it was just so cool, because I think you and I, we always just kind of talk about like the energy and the intuition in our gut. And it just made me smile when I listened, because I was listening to some of the other ones, and everyone was amazing. And it was such a weird process for me, because I'm like, am I selling myself to you? Are you selling yourself to me? And it's kind of like we're like on a date. Yeah. But it was like, it was super cool to listen to the voice memo after our call, because I just felt like, you know, when you feel like someone gets it. And I love how you describe Day Street too, because I think one of the things that's daunting for someone who's writing their first book is like figuring out like, am I a priority? Am I at the bottom of the barrel? What is this going to look like in terms of support? And I just think that you and your team were just so on board. It was so exciting. So it was such an interesting process. And if anyone is out there thinking about writing a book, editors' calls are so unique. Walk me through, like, what is your style of editing? Because I think the editing process can be grueling. It hasn't been for me, but it can be. And I think it can make somebody second guess everything that they want to say in a book. So what would you describe your style as?
Well, I mean, as you know, from our journey together, I really want to start the process of writing the book and creating the book in a place where we all agree what the goals are. Because the last thing that you want is a manuscript delivered that is completely not what you expected or not what you hoped it would be, or, you know, off the rails, basically, because, you know, earlier in my career,
that would be terrifying.
Like, that would be terrifying. And also, it just doesn't do any service to the writer and the author, you know, they, mm-hmm. So we all have to, you know, make sure we hold hands together and start on the right foot. So I begin, you know, the first thing I do once I sign an author up is, what is our plan here? What is the outline? What is the goal? What is the organizing thesis, you know, and make sure, you know, that even if we bought a book one way, does it need to shift? Does it need to tonally change? You know, and in some case, you know, with you, we had some big conversations about like, who is the woman buying this book? Who, what is the messaging, you know, and, you know, do we need to pivot in some ways? And, you know, sometimes those conversations are harder than others. And, but I think every author that knows that you're really paying attention to this thing that's, they're going to spend a lot of time doing, they're incredibly grateful for that.
So
it saves work on the back end, right?
Yes.
So the way that I edit is that is the first step. And then I like to work and check in as the process goes along. So, you know, whether that's phone calls, whether that's just reading things, whether that's answering questions along the way, every author is different. Mm-hmm. You know, with narrative nonfiction, you know, that's really about, it's almost like writing a novel. So, you know, then I'm just reading for style and tone, or with memoir, I'm reading for style and tone and making sure that, you know, the right news breaks are there, or the right sort of energy and emotional weight is there. But for books that are like super commercial, or we're trying to have like a really prescriptive takeaway, like, are we positioning the book in the right way? Are we giving the reader what they need? You know, because ultimately, you know, we have to sell the book as much as we have to, you know, edit the book too. So I'm always in two frames of mind. I mean, editing is an interesting word, right? Because it's on the page, actual commas and spelling and word changes, right? But it's also like the larger picture of the presentation of the book, right? So I see it in two ways, right? It's sort of forest and trees.
Yes, 100%.
So usually I will, you know, just nuts and bolts, I go in and I read it and I will change words and I will change sentences and I will strike things and I will make cuts. But the most important part about editing is asking questions about what isn't there on the page and what isn't there for the reader and what isn't there that should be, and putting yourself as the editor in the place of the reader. So if we have this agreement, editor and author, what we want this book to accomplish. Okay, so what am I not seeing that does that was supposed to be there based on this goal that we all agreed to? Mm-hmm. And what are the questions that I'm left with? Okay, so maybe you've touched on this theme, but you haven't fully fleshed it out. So I think what you're trying to do is this. Why aren't you doing it? Or maybe I think you've gone too far with this. So let's pull back and go this direction. So it's very much a dialogue as opposed to just nuts and bolts. You know, there's also someone called a copy editor who comes and takes care of all the grammar and all the.
Thank God, you know, for those.
Yes. You know, honestly, you know, I shouldn't be left to, you know, I do my best, but you know, that's really not, I'm there for content and structure mostly, but it's really a dialogue. And I try to keep it that way. I'm also not a dictator, right? So everything is a conversation. So that's how I approach it.
We've been through so many adventures together, from the first episode to now over 500 episodes. Growing the Gold Digger podcast, I can't help but see the similarities between how I grew up too. The first day of school feelings, the awkward braces years, and the excitement for what's next. And I know I'm not alone here. Growing a business takes a lot, and a HubSpot CRM platform is here to help your business grow better. HubSpot's reporting dashboard is like your crystal ball, giving you this bird's eye view on your marketing, sales, and customer service performance so that you can get ahead of any issues before they happen. Automated marketing tools allow you to create robust campaigns across all of your marketing channels, and you can even send, test, and optimize emails for different devices and inboxes. And shared inboxes make incoming chats and emails easy to manage and scale for the whole team. Learn more about how a HubSpot CRM platform can help your business grow better at HubSpot.com. I can't believe I'm saying these words, but I wrote a book. I keep thinking that the more that I say it, the more real it's going to feel, but it's truly been this surreal experience working on this massive project, especially since I said I would never do this. Never say never, right? Well, there's this amazing story behind the book, how it all came together with the encouragement of a massage therapist and seeing a mouse, and how I managed to write my heart out in secrecy over the last few years. My first book is called How Are You Really? And I would love to share all of the behind the scenes with you before it's out this summer. I sincerely hope you'll join me inside of my Insiders Club so that you can take this book writing and launching journey alongside of me. You can join right now at jennakutcher.com/book. That's jennakutcher.com/book for the insider scoop about How Are You Really? I can't wait to share this book and this journey with you. I'll see you on the inside, gold diggers. I love it. So I remember even on our call where we first met and I was doing the editor's meetings, you had already given feedback and I loved that. That was one thing that really drew me to you, was like, I need a guide on this journey and I need to do this not just alone. And I think what's been so valuable about the experience is a lot of times, and I teach this all the time, so it's like hilarious being the student of my own words, which I think is most often in life. But we're often so close to like our own genius or our own stories or our things that, you know, we just make assumptions or we assume somebody already knows this or things like that. And so it's been so awesome to have somebody come in and be like, well, wait, why did you think that? Or like, why did you feel that way? Tell me more about that. And it's like just poking holes in some of the stories where it's like, wait, tell me more, or like lean into this, or just say the dang thing. That is just, it's been super cool. And I think too, one of the things that I love so much about your feedback is it's so straightforward, because I think the process of writing is more emotional than I assumed. And I'm not a super emotional person, but it's like, if some, you're like, I think when you first sent back like the first round of edits, I was like bracing myself, like, oh my gosh, does this suck? Is this the worst? What are we going to do? How are we going to make it through? And then I opened it up and it was like, tell me more about this. And I was like, okay, I can do this.
Yes. Well, I respect the fact that it is an emotional process for my authors, you know, no matter if what kind of book it is, right? Because sharing your writing is like standing naked in front of someone.
100%.
It's completely. And I have to be respectful of that, you know, and I would never be cruel, even if something was disappointing to me, right? Because I realized how hard it is to get to a point where you can submit a manuscript to an editor, especially someone who's doing it for the first time. So, you know, I try to help as much as I can, you know, where someone needs rewrites, I will do them and offer suggestions. Where someone needs to be really handheld to a different place, you know, I really get in there and do the work with them, you know, because, you know, you catch more flies with honey than vinegar.
Yes. It's actually been a fun process though. I think I was really scared of the editing process because sometimes like writers that I follow online, they're like posting these like grueling photos of like, I need to turn in the manuscript by midnight tonight. And it's like feverish and like scary. And it like feels like there's like ominous music playing in the background. And I've loved the process of editing because I feel like with each touch point, it's just getting better and getting better and getting better. And it feels like so much more real. And I have kept it so close. Like my team hasn't read it. Like I just have kept this whole process really close to me. And I think it's one of the first things that I've done that with in so long, because we're so used to this digital age of like, I'm going to do something. Here it is, world, check it out. What do you think? Give me feedback. And like this process just feels so sacred. And so it's been such an interesting, it's like, we're just in it together. And I think that that's such a beautiful thing to just feel like with each pass, it's like, yes, we're getting closer. Yeah. We're getting closer.
Well, thank goodness.
Right?
We wouldn't be doing our jobs if it wasn't getting better. Well, I mean, I said to you early on, like, it's very rare to have a writer respond so positive, so well, and so quickly and so right to editorial direction. I mean, I was incredibly impressed. You know, I just felt like we had a good mind meld going.
Yes.
So, and I think it's because the book is a book that I wanted to buy because it resonated with me as someone who, you know, needed to hear the message myself. Right. And, you know, that's why editors buy books generally, you know, not always, you know, because we see the market for it, but sometimes we buy books because we feel personally, often we buy books because we feel personally passionate about the content. And it helps so much because you think, okay, I feel this too. Right.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, nonfiction editors, you know, we get really, I mean, every editor gets super wrapped up in the books that they do. We can't help it, you know, but, you know, when you're making decisions about what you want to acquire, you know, sometimes books really just speak to you because of something going on in your life or something in your family, and it gets in your craw, you know, and this one did for me because of where I am in my lifespan as a woman, as middle age, as a mom, where my friend group is, you know, it just was very relevant to me. So I was engaging in it as a person and as an editor.
I love that. I feel like too, one of my favorite conversations that we had, I was out on a walk, totally out of breath, pregnant. We're talking. And you were talking about how you kind of internally launched it to the team. And we were having this conversation about like, why now? Why this message? And why me to deliver it? And when you broke it down that way, you know, first off, it's like so easy to have imposter syndrome. Like, well, why me? Like, why am I the messenger of this message? What does that mean? But then it was like so cool because it was like the conversations we were having, not about the book, were totally aligned with what we were writing in the book. Mm-hmm. And do you want to just describe a tiny bit of how you describe that to your team? Like, why now? Why this message? And why me?
Right. One of the biggest parts of my job is that I'm your mouthpiece because you're not there at HarperCollins, right? Yep. And so I have to, you know, present Jenna Kutcher and every other author that I do to them and make sure that they fully understand all the beauty and joy and reason why we choose the books we choose. So I'm like the cheerleader and the teacher. And I kind of love, I do love that part of my job. And, you know, I presented it this way. So, you know, we've come out of the last 2 years, almost now, I guess it's 2 years now, especially as women, as we're just completely worn out. And yet the messaging has been and always and continues to be go, 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 manage everything. And, you know, too much is not enough. And I think that when you read the statistics about the Great Resignation, or you read the statistics about people looking for counter programming, the reality is that, you know, women don't want to hustle anymore. They're looking for a different way to live, and they're looking for a different way to seek joy, and almost desperately, right? And they're looking for permission to do that, because that's what life is demanding of them through the reality of how hard this has been. And there is a way to do it. There is a way to succeed and be happy and still be present in your life. And I think we're so bad at being present in our own lives, being honest with ourselves, but also celebrating the fact that we are successful, you know, because it's always about what's next, what's next, what's next, what's on the list, what's next. So what appeals to me about your message is taking a minute to say, what do I really, really want? How can I get it? How can I enjoy the things that are truly, truly important to me when it comes to my career and my family and my time? Mm-hmm. Because if anything we learned during lockdown was that time is precious. We should enjoy the time, and, you know, working all the time and not enjoying what really matters is not sustainable, and it doesn't make us happy. So when you look at who's out there in this space of self-improvement, you have, you know, the super woo-woo person, you know, and she doesn't appeal to a lot of American women. She's too woo-woo and she's not accessible. Then you have the hustle brand, who's like, get up at 5 a.m., drink a gallon of water and exercise all the time, and then you can beat all the competition. And that does not resonate after what we've just been through. So your message is right there in the center of what real is. And so that's why I felt like it was so important to publish you.
Thank you for saying that. That just, I don't know, it just makes it feel so real. And I think something that's been really beautiful about walking through this process with you is that we've had a lot of life happening. Yes. In the process of this book. And it's funny because I'll often remind Drew, like, did you know I'm writing a book right now? Because I have just integrated it into my work in a way that has not changed the balance. Like, I wanted to make sure, because here's the thing, Carrie, have you ever met someone who you like, they preach this thing, they like talk about this thing, they like, that's the thing that they'll die on. And then you meet them and they're not living their values. They're not living it out. And it's so disappointing, because you're like, if even the guru can't do it, how would I ever do that? Have you ever met someone like that where you're like, oh, yeah. What?
More than once. And it is incredibly disappointing.
Yeah. And I was like, if we're going to do this thing, like if we're really going to do this thing, one, we're going to walk through life together, which is exactly what we've done. But two, we're going to live out the mission as best as we can through the process. And I'm just freaking proud of us, because I think, you know, looking at me, you and Margaret, we're like this little trifecta who are busy. We're moms, we're career oriented, but we're all yearning for the same thing, the message of the book. And I just was like, I don't want to be out of alignment while writing this thing. I don't want to go lock myself in the woods for a month and be away from my family. I don't want to be up till midnight doing this and missing, you know, sending my daughter off to school. And so I'm just really proud of us, because I think it's been a challenge to us to like follow the message, stay true to it. But I also think we've done a hella good job of trying to do that.
I think so too. And the thing that I've done is, you know, I have this core group of women that I'm incredibly close to, you know, fellow moms, all in the same, you know, our lives aren't the same, but we all are in the same age group, you know, and they're really close friends of mine, and just sharing bits of it with them to, you know, just to make sure that my internal ear is right. And, you know, the things that I'm wondering and asking and dialoguing with on the book, it is also resonating with them. And of course, you know, we're both on the same, we're all on the same and on the right track, because, you know, it's really, it's working. So that's been a nice thing too, because, it's, you know, it's like our own little, like, what do you call those groups of, you know, I can't think of the word, but, you know, when you want to have like feedback and, you know, these are women that I trust and whose opinions I really value. So
I love that. Nice. I love that too. And I think it does open up conversation, because it's like, when we think about the topic and we think about how, you know, there are so many different facets of our lives, from how we feel about ourselves and our identity to how do we balance the multi passions that we have, to how does this work with relationships, whether it's a marriage or a partnership or as a daughter or a caregiver. And I think that it's so cool, because through the writing process, one, it's like bringing up so many things that I've experienced in my past, but it's also like leading me to like the future questions, and it's leading me to deeper conversations with people, where it's like, we only have an hour together. Who sits down for a casual coffee date anymore? What does it even look like? Maybe we're on Zoom, but it's like, cut the crap. How are you really doing? Like, where are you at? And I just think it's been beautiful, because it's just like enriched the conversations and the dialogue when we were prone to just talk about the fluff. It's like, I think we're all past that, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think you get to the heart of what's really important, and, you know, there is no time for, you know, chitty chat in the Starbucks line or the parking lot or playground or whatever.
Oh, you know? I love it. So if somebody's listening to this and they're like, okay, my dream is to work with an editor, my dream is to work with someone like Carrie, what are like three things that you look for in a proposal? Is it gut? Is it your intuition? Or are there specific things that you're looking for, boxes that you might tick of like, this might be something worth investing my time and energy into?
I mean, I think the nature of the Day Street list is I'm looking for someone who has, you know, a pretty strong, you know, platform, which is a tough word for someone who's not in this business to understand, but that's, you know, they have built a business or a following of some kind doing what they're doing. And that doesn't mean they have to be on television or have a mega successful podcast or something. It just means that in their field, they are well known, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that we know that when their book comes out, that the people who like them and respect them are going to either talk about their book or be mouthpieces for their book or be there to buy it. So platform is really important. But the, you know, the other thing is that, is this a story that is, or a book that is unique in the category, right? Is it a book that like, that we can position easily, you know, books that someone is trying to sort of say, there's never been a book like it. Well, that's not really true ever, you know,
and maybe not a good way to enter the sphere.
No. You have to be able to say, you know, what your book is like, but how it's different, right? Because, you know, X meets X, or it sounds cliche, but you know, we do speak that way in publishing, just like the movies, right? So, you know, you want to be relatable and, you know, somewhat familiar and, you know, not come out of nowhere, but at the same time, you know, be yourself, and also just really clarity of vision, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so many times I read proposals and I think like, they're not yet sure what this book is going to be. And those are proposals I don't finish. You know, or if I feel like what they want is for the editor to do the heavy lifting, and, you know, that's a tough ask for me. But, you know, if I love the writing so much, sometimes I'll take the chance. But, you know, the author, you know, I think a lot of times too, authors need to understand that the publisher can't do everything, right?
Yep.
So you have to be a major, major player in not only the writing of the book, but the publication of the book. So think about that too. You know, how will you motivate and activate and amplify and get the word out? Because most books fail. And that's just the reality of publishing. It's not, it's not a, you know, a business where, you know, we have, you know, every home run. So, you know, you have to be a big part of the plan for how to roll a book out. So, you know, those are the things I'm looking for.
I love that. My final question for you is, how would you describe my book to listeners and why you think they should get it? And it's not out yet, but it will be out soon. And I feel like, Carrie, you're going to be able to do this even better than I can do it.
I feel like your book is a conversation with your most wise, supportive, and funny girlfriend and mentor. I feel like your book is, you know, the conversation that maybe you wish you could have when you are laying in your bed in the deep quiet of the night thinking, you know, this is not the life that I dream for myself. And I don't know how to get over the hump to what I feel like my life could or should be. And should is a really loaded word. So maybe that's not the word I should use, but could be what I want it to be, what I hope for it to be. I published Gabrielle Union, and I was at her launch event a couple of weeks ago. And she used this analogy when talking about her girlfriends, that they are the balloons that you tie to your wrist when you feel like you're going to float away because reality is just pulling you off the ground. You know, things are just, you know, not working, and they keep you grounded. And I think that there's a lot about this book that reminds me of that analogy, because, you know, as women, as moms, as working moms, as wives, as friends, we sort of don't give ourselves the grace of honesty, right?
Yeah.
We just have to be the thing for the others, right? And the constant and the shoulder and, you know, the answer giver and the finder of lost things, et cetera. And this book is, it asks you the questions that you want to be asked, because we deserve to have grace too. And we deserve to allow ourselves to dream. And there comes a point in your life when you're pretty tapped out, and or, you know, maybe you just want to take a second because, you know, what feels comfortable isn't exactly what fits. And that's what this book does. It's a challenge, but it's a comfortable challenge. It's not one that makes you feel like you can't do it. It's all on your own terms. So I feel like it's just the best, most gratifying conversation you've had with your smartest, wisest girlfriend.
I have more work for you to do because I'm working on my acknowledgments. And let me tell you, okay, first off, when I started this process, I challenged myself for every book I read. I read a lot too. I love reading. And for every book I read, I make myself read from cover to cover, including the acknowledgments. And I'm like, how the heck do you think the people that helped make this book come to life? And I remember challenging my mom at the beginning of my process of writing. I said, Mom, next time you read a book, read all the people that helped make this book come into life. Because I think a lot of times you see the person's name on the cover, right? And you just assume it was just a solo journey. They just sat in a cabin in the woods. They busted out these words and here they are. And I think one of the most beautiful things about this process is that it literally does take a village in so many different ways, from agents to editors, to co-writers, to copy editors, to promotional people, to the people who design the cover. I mean, there's just so many hands in the pot. And Carrie, you're going to have to edit where I say thank you to Carrie. And how the heck do you sum up just someone helping you bring such a beautiful vision, something I swore I would never do, to life? And so you've got your work cut out for you a little bit more, but you're almost off the hook. And I am just so grateful to be on this journey with you and to be doing life with you. And I don't know, something tells me that this isn't the only book. And that's really exciting to me.
Oh yeah, no, you're in it. You're in it now. So
we're
moving forward. and I would be remiss to say that if I didn't say how important my team is with at Day Street, just the Heidi Richter, who runs publicity for us, and Kendra Newton, who runs marketing for us. And, you know, to me, like the books that I make with them, because yes, their vision for how we make our books is as important to me as the editing, you know, and yes, I really rely on them. And, you know, I feel like we're such a close team, and it's, I love that they're both super smart, sassy women. And, yes, you know, it's, I just have to throw that in because we're really aligned on our visions too. And, yeah, you know, they both came to the table in such a smart way for this book and have been with me through the process of editing as well. So I feel super fortunate in that they've stuck with me for so long too. So
it's the same. And that was what was so fun too about your editor call, is that I got to meet them and just see, like, this is the village that yep, needs to come together. And I think that it's just beautiful for anyone that's listening. I challenge you to just read the acknowledgement sometime, to just see how many hands and brains and hearts go into a book. It is absolutely not a solo endeavor. And I think that that's been one of the most surprisingly enjoyable pieces of this process, because I think it could feel very isolating and scary. And instead it feels just exciting and just astonishing. I don't know. So Carrie, where can everybody learn more about Day Street and check out the books that you've helped come into this world and learn more about the imprint?
Day Street Books, www.daystreetbooks.com on the internet. We just redid our website. Actually, we just revamped our logo. We have fancy pictures of all of the team, and I'm really happy with the way it turned out. So take a look there. And it shows all of our recent and upcoming, a lot of our upcoming publications as well.
Amazing. And it's Day, D-E-Y, Street
D-E-Y,
Books.
Day Street. And that's the street that's right next to our building downtown in New York City.
I love it. I can't wait to come visit too. I mean, for real.
I know. It'd be nice to meet in person once
the world
can happen
is
again.
Something. Exactly. I know. Oh, Carrie, thank you so much for this interview. This was incredible.
Oh, my pleasure. And, you know, here's to many great things to come, Jenna.
Yes. When I think about the process of writing and editing this book, I can close my eyes and just think about the people who have helped me along this way. And I feel so lucky to be working with people that I naturally just love. I gravitate towards them. I want to text them about non-work things and have conversations. Carrie has been an integral piece of me believing in myself, believing in the words I'm writing, and believing in the mission of this book. And she has been an exceptional editor in the process. I have loved getting her feedback, and I have loved the way that she's pushed me to make this book the best book that you will read in this year. If you want to check out more about the book, want to learn about what it's called, what's inside, and how you can be an insider in this process, head to jennakutcher.com/book. That's jennakutcher.com/book. There is more information awaiting you and a few spoilers, and I would love to have you be a part of my insiders community as we continue this process of writing and publishing and launching the book. It is something that I am so excited about, and there is nothing more that I would love than to have you be a part of the journey. Again, that is jennakutcher.com/book. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Gold Digger Podcast. And until next time, keep on digging your biggest goals. I'm over here giving you a virtual high five because you just finished another episode of the Gold Digger Podcast. Did that go by way too fast for anyone else? If you want more, head over to golddiggerpodcast.com for show notes and all the discount codes from today's sponsors. And if you're looking for a new crew of movers and shakers like you to bounce ideas and ask questions, be sure to join my exclusive community for gold diggers on Facebook. The link's waiting for you at golddiggerpodcast.com.